That's music by Tchaikovsky, the Andantino, the slow movement from the Symphony No. 4 in F minor, Opus 36, the Colorado Symphony Orchestra, led by Maren Alsop. It's 9:32 this Monday, going up to a high of 8 degrees today under gray skies. It's about 4 degrees right now. You're listening to Classical Mornings with Mike and Gene here at the New Classical FM. Now, wolves conjure up a lot of differing images for people. A sleek, majestic creature, the forerunner of our beloved dogs, also a creature of myth and fairy tales, an apex predator, a killer of livestock, or a reminder of how beautiful nature can be. Wolves are, if anything, certainly polarizing, and this is the case in Nate Blakeslee's new book, The Wolf, The True Story of Survival and Obsession in the West, published by Random House Canada. It tells the tale of 06, a descendant of one of the original wolves reintroduced into Yellowstone Park in 1995. Her struggles for survival and those who would deny her and her ilk the right to survive. And Nate Blakeslee joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much for coming in. That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, this struggle to reintroduce a native animal into places where it's been extinct and those who oppose it. I mean, in terms of the story you tell, this seems almost as controversial as gun control or abortion in the United States.
Yes. If you are a certain kind of politician in the West, where you stand on wolves has become a kind of litmus test, as you say, like abortion or gun control. It's a way of saying to your constituents what you stand for as a politician. And it has been caught up in this dynamic that's been going on in Western politics for some time, in which there is great resentment over the degree to which decisions are made in Washington that affect life in the West, because so much of the American West is controlled by the federal government.
Exactly. But it's kind of a crazy thing, right? Because we're talking about animals, and to have politics intrude on an animal's life is...
Yeah, that was a revelation for me.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how politicized wildlife management had become. Mm-hmm. We think of it as science-driven, and it is, up to a point.
Right.
But in a place like the American West, which has been so thoroughly exploited for so long, fur and then timber and then gold and oil and coal, wilderness is something that has to be created or recreated by people.
Right.
And it's a political process. Inevitably, there will be winners and losers. Not everyone agrees what an ideal wilderness will look like, and nowhere is this more the case than with wolves.
Will there ever be a consensus? I mean, because on one hand, you have, you know, like you're just hinting at that classic American ideal of man going off into the frontier and you know, taking over nature for his own purpose. And the other, the need to conserve and preserve what's there, which is as old a mythological concept in America.
Oh, yeah. The West is, because it's owned by the federal government, everybody in the United States thinks of it as their common heritage.
Right.
And it is. It's part of one of the gifts of being an American is being able to go out to these beautiful places. There's no place else on Earth like Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. The park itself is a gem, but it's just one piece of this much larger wilderness, the largest remaining essentially intact temperate ecosystem in the world. But until recently, it was broken. It was incomplete.
Yeah.
Wolves had all been hunted out, mainly by the end of the 19th century, by trappers and then later by cattle ranchers. And so what you saw in Yellowstone was this explosion in the elk population.
Right.
So much
so. There's nothing to take them down.
Exactly. And so it started to degrade the habitat, so much so that park rangers had to shoot elk. They would shoot thousands of them every winter when there were no visitors. And the idea was bring the wolves back, you know, and it will be a more holistic way to solve this problem. But, of course, it was controversial.
Yeah.
The descendants of all those ranchers that hunted them out, they're all still there. Not in the park, but around the park, running sheep and cattle. Mm-hmm. And then elk hunting is big business in the Northern Rockies. If you're a guide, you can charge $5,000 to an out-of-town hunter to come and guide them to get an elk. Mm-hmm. There's restaurants, there's motels, cater only to hunters. And wolves eat a lot of elk. And so they knew that their livelihood would be threatened too, and that's why it was so controversial.
06 has been described as the most famous wolf in the world. Her life, like, unbelievably well-documented and observed. And she almost comes across in your book as a human character in a novel.
I'm glad to hear you say that, and I wanted her to come across that way. I read a lot of wolf books in preparation for this project. Mm-hmm. Most of them were book-length essays or straightforward wildlife biology. I never read one that was told from the perspective of a wolf. Mm. The obstacles to that are obvious, but 06 is no ordinary wolf.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was seen by thousands of visitors to the park. They watched through spotting scopes. It's a big pastime now in Yellowstone. But crucially, she was also observed by this much smaller subculture of these really hardcore wolf aficionados. They come to the park every day. They track the wolves
wow.
with their radio collars.
Yeah.
They get them in their scopes. They watch them for hours. And this one woman in particular, this retired school teacher from San Diego, she gave me this treasure trove of notes that she had taken, daily observations of 06 in her pack for 3 years.
Wow.
It was the diary of a wolf pack.
That's amazing.
And there was everything in there that you needed to create a book that read like a novel, as you say, where the main characters were wolves.
I would love to have that job. I have to admit, given today's climate in terms of political climate, in terms of on social media, I mean, you're pretty even-handed in your portrayal of both sides of the story. You gave equal room to the views of such anti-wolf people as Steve Turnbull. Was that a difficult thing for you to do?
Well, I'm an environmentalist, but I'm also a journalist.
Right.
And it was important to me. I think in the West, this debate has been going on for so long that the positions have gotten kind of stultified and the politics around it has become very poisonous. I am from the West, but I'm from Texas, which is a very long way from the Northern Rockies. And so I kind of brought a fresh perspective, or I hoped that I did.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Stephen Turnbull.
Yeah.
He is the person who sadly shot.
Okay, you're going to give that away?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
all right. I wasn't going to give it away.
It was. I appreciate that. It was huge news in the United States. Yeah. It's in a lot of the book reviews, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The cat is out of the bag. But one of the unique things about the book is he was the man that shot the most famous wild animal in the world.
Yeah.
The New York Times reported on it the day after it happened. It was all over the world. He kept his name out of the papers, wisely, or he would have been the next, you know, Minnesota dentist who saw Cecil Blythe.
Exactly.
But by the time I caught up with him, about a year later, he had changed his mind.
Mm.
And he was ready to tell his story, provided we didn't use his real name, and Stephen Turnbull is not his real name.
Ah, I see. Okay.
So you get the perspective of the watchers, but you also get the perspective of this man who did this thing by himself at dawn in one of the most remote places in the lower 48, did not know he was shooting the world's most famous wild animal, didn't find out until the next day. But the next day, people all over the world are judging this thing that he did.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very surreal experience for him.
Unbelievable. The other interesting thing I came away from your book is that given that in your country, and in this one for that matter, I mean, public parks and wildlife conservation areas are under attack constantly. Mining rights are being given, lumber rights. They seem to be on the agenda for areas that were, you know, strictly set up for tourism and the preservation of nature. And I mean this in no pun intended, but what is the nature of national parks these days?
Well, that's a really good question. And this movement to set aside more and more land in the West for conservation, for ecotourism, it has really been gaining steam in the United States under President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
The great fear now is that there's this backlash against it and that some of those monuments are slated to be taken off and out of protection.
Mm-hmm.
There has been this fight in the West for years over the people who actually live there and make a living on some of this public land, timber, coal, and then sort of the way policy is set in Washington from their perspective, this sort of overreaching federal government, these bureaucrats who don't understand what life is really like in the West. And wolves is just sort of the latest battle in that much longer, sort of decades-long struggle that's going on. You would have to say right now that sort of anti-wolf forces kind of have the upper hand in the Northern Rockies because the reintroduction project that brought them from Canada back to that area of the United States was so successful that they have spread throughout much of their former range, so much so that sort of local officials were able to convince the federal government to take them off the endangered species list. And so now they are hunted and trapped all around the park. But there is a broader fight over what to do in the rest of the lower 48 with respect to wolves.
Mm.
Because once they saturate that area, they will start to spread. And they already have into Oregon and Washington and California. And so the fight now is over whether they ought to remain protected or whether they should be hunted and trapped as well.
Do you think – I mean, one of the things – when I was reading this book, I was reminded of one time I was fishing outside of Algonquin Park, literally, you know, 500 yards outside the park boundary.
Yeah.
And I was walking along a stream and I came across, because they're protected in Algonquin Park here in Ontario.
Sure.
I came across a wolf that had been shot.
Oh, wow.
And all that was left was like they had gutted it and they left the head behind.
Oh, wow.
Do you think that not only should they be protected in the park, but there should be also like a buffer zone?
Many people
do. Like, you know, maybe 10 miles?
Many people do. And if you stop and think about it, there's a certain logic to it.
Mm.
Not only because these are beloved wolves, but also because these are wolves that see people almost every day, especially if they live in this open area of the park called the Lamar Valley, where wolf watching is very popular.
Yeah.
There are always people there with their scopes watching wolves. And when they were first brought back, biologists assumed you wouldn't be able to see them. They weren't brought back as a tourist attraction. They were brought back to make the park whole.
Mm-hmm.
To their surprise, many of them did stay in that valley, and that's why this new business of wolf watching arose. But you take a wolf like that who's used to seeing people from a mile or two away and thinking that those people are no danger or even closer.
Yeah.
They leave the park. They don't know where the boundary is. They're completely naive about people. The behavior that Stephen Turnbull described to me that he saw that day when he shot 06 establishes to my mind that she was tolerant of people, which raises this question of whether or not it's ethical to shoot them.
It's a debate that I'm afraid will probably go on for quite some time, but...
Yeah, it will. And I understand you have similar debate in Alberta about wolves being culled by the government to protect caribou.
Yep. It's a question of balance, and I never know if we're ever going to get it right. But I want to thank you so much for coming in today, and thank you for writing this very, very moving and very thought-provoking book.
Thanks for saying that. It's been my pleasure.
Been talking to Nate Blakeslee, author of The Wolf, A True Story of Survival and Obsession in the West. It's published by Random House Canada. And no matter where you sit on the side of the debate, you should run out to your local bookstore and pick this up.